And we're holding on page Lamed Vav in Chagiga, the third line, middle of Yud Gimel. We learned yesterday all about what happened with Acher and how he became an apikoros and went off the derech completely, and how Reb Meir was working so hard to get him to do tshuva. And so now the Gemara continues with the aftermath of the story. Bite shel Acher asya l'chamei de Rebbe. Well, before that, actually, one of the things from that long Tosfos that we were talking about yesterday that brings more details of the story from the Yerushalmi, we learned about yesterday how in our Gemara, Reb Meir arranged for Acher to be able to get into Gehenim, and then much later on, Reb Yochanan arranged for him to get out of Gehenim into Gan Eden. The Yerushalmi tells it all differently, that he went into Gehenim right away, and Reb Meir got him out of there. Anyway, so people asked him, the Yerushalmi says, what kind of a thing is that? What are you making such efforts on behalf of a Rosha? So the mayor answers them, you know, al-derech, like we find a halacha in Hilchus Shabbos, that if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, you have various, you save the Sfarim, and you save the Sifrei Kodesh and whatever, and you even have, you can bend the rules of Shabbos a little bit of it, that you can carry them out to a place that doesn't have, that to a chotzer, even though there's no Eruv. And the Mishnah says over there that you save the tik ha-sefer, the case that the sefer is in, together with the sefer, even it goes on to say there in the Mishnah, even if that tik contains money in it as well, which would make a muktzah normally, but here you save along with the sefer. So the same way that Meir says to them, Acher, yes, unfortunately he became what he became, but he had Torah in him, therefore he's like a case of a sefer Torah. Yes, the same way as the Torah doesn't go into the fire of Gehenim, neither should he. So now the Gemara continues. Bite shel Acher asya l'tamei de Rebbe. Acher's daughter, after he had passed away, came to Rebbe to ask for tzedakah. Omrelei, she says to him, Rebbe, paneseni, Rebbe, please support me. She was poor, apparently. Omrelei, bite shel mihat. So he asks her, whose daughter are you? Sometimes you have, for example, you have at the end of Hodias, for example, where it talks about that a Kohen takes precedence over a Levi and a Levi over Yisrael and so forth. So he needs to know where she belongs in that. And also he needs to know what family she's from, because the Gemara has a whole sugya about it in Ksubas. You're supposed to support a poor person according to the standard that they were used to before. So he needs to know what family she's from, so he knows what standard of living they used to have. Omrol, she says, Bitter shall Acher, Ani, she says, I'm Acher's daughter. Omrullah, he says, very surprised. Adayan Yeshmi Zare Ba'olam, there's any of his descendants left in the world. V'hoksiv Lenin V'lenecha Ba'amoy, the Pasuk says, he doesn't have a child or a grandchild in his people. The context is talking about a Rosha. So now, Marshall points out, of course, there are many Rishoyim that have lots of descendants in the world. But Rebbe figures here where Acher was Yedea Shibona, he knew about a lacus or as high a level as a person could get. He was one of the Abash and Nichnas of the Paradis, after all. And then he rebelled against Hashem. So Rebbe figured he's in a special category. He should be in the category of the kind of Rishoyim who leave behind no descendants. Omrolai, so she says to him, Rebbe, Zachor Torosev al Tizkor L'maisa. Remember his Torah that he taught and that he learned and taught. Don't remember his deeds. It's true he acted wrongly and he became what he became, all the horrifying things that we learned about yesterday, but after all, he had Torah. Miyad Yoda Eshmin Hashemayim, right away to back up what she's saying. A fire came down from Shemayim, representing his Torah, because Torah is compared to fire. The sichsecha safsolei shel Rebbe, and it singed the bench that Rebbe was sitting on to tell him that, yeah, in other words, she's right. He learned and taught so much Torah that would be a reason why he still has descendants and why we should have rachmonis on him. Bacha Rebbe v'omar. So Rebbe cried when he saw that happen. V'omar, he said, l'misganin b'torah kach. You see that even people whose Torah was so degraded that, as we say, look what happened to Acher, Kach, and still it has such a protective power over him, l'mishtabchinba, how much more so to people who bring praise to the Torah, who learn it and keep it the way they're supposed to, alachas kama v'kama. What happened in the end as far as him supporting her, the Gemara doesn't go on with the story, but I guess we can assume that he did. Okay, now, we said before that we learned yesterday that even after Acher went off the Tavros Ra'ah, Reb Meir continued to learn Torah from him. So the question is, how could he? Reb Meir hefi gomer Torah mipumei da'acher. How could Reb Meir be learning Torah from Acher? V'ha'omer Rav Baba Chana Om Reb Yechanan. Later on, Rabbi Babachana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and again, even though it was only expressed in those words later on by Rabbi Babachana, it was known, the concept was known long before that, and Rabbi Meir knew it. My dichtiv, what does it mean? The Pasuk says, Kisifse Choyen Yishmeru Das, the lips of the Koyen will preserve the knowledge of Torah, the Soda Yivakshu Mipihu, and they will seek Torah from his mouth, ki malach Hashem tzvokos hu, because he is a malach of Hashem tzvokos, from which we learn, im doima harav malach Hashem tzvokos, if the rav is like a malach of, is like a malach of Hashem. So Marsha explains, in other words, now you have like this, the Koyan is from Shevet Levi. So, and he's the one who teaches the Torah to the Jewish people in Moshe Rabbeinu's bracha, the Shevet Levi. He says, Yodu Mishpatecha L'Yakov. So if he himself preserves it, then you have to see whether he acts like a malach. Vim lav, and if not, al yuvakshu Torah mipihu. Then he shouldn't be looking for Torah from his mouth. So, being that Acher had become a Rosha, how could Reb Meir be learning Torah from him? The answer is Omer Shlokish, Reb Meir Kro Ashkach V'Dorash. Yes, but Reb Meir found a pasuk that shows that there's an exception to that. That even though you do have that point about that you have to only learn from a rab who's like a malach Hashem Tzvokos, but nevertheless there's a pasuk that expresses a different point. Now, the pasuk says, "Hat oznecha u'shma divrei chachamim, incline your ear and listen to the words of the chachamim, v'libcha toshis l'daiti, and set your heart and focus your heart l'daiti on my das." Now, l'dak tom loynemar, it doesn't say focus on their das, elo l'daiti, but rather to my das. So Rashi points out, in other words, the point is the very fact that the pasuk has to imply that you shouldn't follow their das, that shows we're talking about a rosha. Nevertheless, you can still incline your ear to listen to them. Don't learn from their bad ways, l'dai tam, but focus on the daiti, on the das of Hashem that is in the Torah. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Yosi Bachanina, Amar Mehacha. Rabbi Yosi Bachanina has a different pasuk that expresses the same point. Shimi vas, daughter, O daughter, listen, uri, and see, vahati oznech, and incline your ear, v'shichi amech, v'esavich, v'goymer, and forget your people and the house of your father. In other words, again, we're talking about that you have somebody who we're telling you to look and listen, and forget about the negativity that you're seeing over there that, in other words, that you can overlook that and learn Torah from him. Now, Marsha explains, so in both psukim we have mention of the ear. All the sensory organs in the body, So don't always be listening, don't always be paying attention to all the chachamim, because again, they might be reshoyim. But libcha toshis l'daiti, instead, the ear is going to hear whatever it's going to hear, even from chachamim who are not worthy of it. But as far as libcha, make sure that that's focused to Hashem. In the same way, in other words, with the other pasuk from Tilim, also expresses the same idea, uri'i v'hati oznech. So look and incline your ear, but be careful that your other evarim don't get involved in learning from them, in particular your heart. But the point is, v'shichvi, and forget that there's something negative going on with this person. So therefore, Rav Meir has two psukim that show that yes, you could learn Torah from a rasha. Well, the question becomes, koshu kroya hadadi. Well, then you have a contradiction between the psukim. And the answer is like Kasha Hob a Godol Hob a Cotton. It depends whether you're talking about a Godol or a Cotton. So Rashi explains a Godol doesn't literally just mean somebody who's older, means somebody who knows how to be careful that he's not going to learn from the Rosh. As opposed to a Cotton, a person who's not on that level yet has to be more careful not to learn from the Rosh, because he might be influenced by him. Akosef brings some other things in this regard also. Tosfos actually mentions, Tosfos on this sugya over here mentions, although it's not printed here in Ein Yaakov, that there was a case in Moed Cotton of there was a Talmud Chacham over there who was acting in a way that was called, that people were saying about what he's doing wrong. There were rumors going around, strongly founded rumors of the Averis that he was doing. And Rabbi Yehuda put him in Cherem so people don't learn Torah from him. So what's going on? According to our Gemara over here, there still are people who could learn from such a person. So either Tosfos says, first of all, maybe there were lesser people learning from him, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda was concerned that they might be influenced by him. But even so, another possibility is maybe they even were Gedolim. But nevertheless, the fact is, because he acted in a way that he deserved to be put in Cherem, then Rabbi Yehuda took the opportunity to do that, even though it would deprive the Gedolim from learning from him. There's various other explanations of how to understand what Ketanim and Gedolim, how what it means, Hav Gadol, Hav Katan. One of them that it means that it may mean the caliber of the Talmud Chacham himself. Is he a Gadol versus is he a Katan in knowledge of Torah? On top of that also, I mean, there is quite a bit of discussion about the parameters of this, because we do actually find we have examples of Gedolei Yisrael who learned from Rishoyim, from Jewish Rishoyim, even from Goyim. The Rambam, for example, famously writes that he read all the books on Avodah Zarah that were available in his time because he needed to know this information, and for when he's writing Yad HaZaka and when he's arguing against them in Morin Nevuchim and so forth. So obviously there are many different parameters to this, and here the mayor figured that what he's learning from Acher, he held that he's doing it within the permissible boundaries. He's learning Torah from him, but not in a way that he's going to be at all influenced by his bad ways. Ki Osir of Dimi Omar, when Reb Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Amri B'mar Rava, the way they express it in Eretz Yisrael, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, So they say Reb Meir Ashkach Toichla. Reb Meir, it's like a person who found a date. Ocho Gava, he ate the inside, meaning in other words the actual meat, the actual flesh of the date. V'shoda Shichla Levara, and he threw out the pit. So the same way, in other words, Reb Meir knew how to extract the good from Acher's Torah and throw out the pit, which is indigestible. Similarly, at one point, Rava Bar Rav Shila met up with Eliyahu Anavi. Omale, he asked him, Maika Ovid Kutchabrichu. Right now in Shemayim, what is Hashem doing? Omale, so Eliyahu tells him, Ka Oma Shmaitim it Pumayu de Kulu Rabbanon. He's saying over teachings in Torah in the names of all of the Chachamim. Omi Pumi did Reb Meir like Ka Oma, but he's not saying over in Reb Meir's name. Because, in other words, as long as the Chachamim down here on earth did not agree with Reb Meir's shita of learning from Acher, then Hashem and Shemayim was following that as well, and not quoting Reb Meir's statements in Torah either. We find in various places that the Chachamim held it against Reb Meir, and there seems to be evidence that maybe even the Hamoin Am held it against Reb Meir as well. We learned about yesterday how the Yerushalmi describes how during the Shas Hashmad, Acher was going and telling on Jews who are trying to at least not break the mitzvahs quite so badly, and he's telling on them and forcing them to actually violate it. Now, there's a famous story in the Medrash that tells how one time there was a woman who went to a mayor's drosha on Friday night, and she came home very, very late, and much later than expected, and her husband is angry at her that she's home so late, and he tells her, I'm not going to let you back in the house until you spit in the mayor's eye 7 times. And then the story continues. The mayor found out what happened, and he pretended like he had an eye infection, and the cure for it is to spit in his eye 7 times. The husband just tells him until he spit in his eye. So he pretends like he has an eye infection, and he says he calls around for a person who knows how to spit in an eye. So her friends tell her, here you have the opportunity. She does, and she has to do it 7 times because that's the way the cure is supposed to be. And then her mayor tells her afterward, now you can go tell your husband I didn't spit in his eye 1 time, but 7 times. And when they asked him, how could you do such a thing? He says, you know, listen, if the Eivishter foregoes his honor for the sake of the Soita and allows his name to be erased, how much more so me in order to make Shalom Bayis? The point, though, is we have to ask, how did this husband have the chutzpah to even suggest such a thing in the first place? So one possibility is that there were people who held it against Acher for what he had done, and they took it out on a mayor as well. So therefore, this husband, as much as he was an Ama Oretz and a boor and whatever else, and lacking in Midas, but there may have been something that is in the air where there are people who are ready to treat a mayor like that. So here we're saying that in Shemayim also, they were treating the mayor without the respect. Hashem was treating him not with the same respect as the other Chachamim, that Hashem was not quoting any Torah in his name. Omalei Amai, so Rav Barav Shila asks why. Mishum de Kogama Shmaitim Upumid Acher. And so he asks why, and he says, what do you mean, why? Because Rav Meir learned from Acher, and he shouldn't have done that. Omar, so Rav Barav Shila defends Rav Meir. He says, my nakamina. So what's the difference? What's the problem? Rav Meir rimain matzah. It's like Rav Meir found a pomegranate, toichei ochal. He ate the inside, the seeds of the pomegranate, which are good to eat, klipasei zarak, and he threw out the peel. In other words, the same way, the same way as in the previous metaphor with the date. Reb Meir knew how to distinguish between the parts of, between what he should learn from Acher and what he shouldn't. So now we have two different metaphors for it. So Marsha explains because there were two different things that went wrong with Acher. First, there was that he went wrong in Deus and his beliefs in the fundamentals of Yiddishkeit, that as we said, he thought that Matat is a second god or whatever. So that's something on the inside, and then on the outside, you have his Torah. So therefore, that's comparable to eating the date and throwing out the pit, which is on the inside. You eat through the date. You discover the pit inside the same way. You start going through Acher. You find these apokursish ideas that he had. Then on the other hand, you have when Acher openly went bad on the outside and stopped keeping mitzvahs and started doing averus. That's more like the peel of the pomegranate. So then Rav Meir also, he knew how to cut through that peel and get to the Torah that's on the inside, that was still pure and uncorrupted. And Rav Meir didn't learn from either one of those things of Acher. Ian Yaakov says it a little bit differently. You know, we also have to realize it's not just a matter of an inside in Acher's dais and an outside and how he actually behaved. We have to realize it took time for one thing to develop into the other. First, he had his apikursish ideas after the experience in the paradis. Only later on did it actually come out in the open when, as we said, he was pushed over the edge by whatever it was that he saw, and then by what he heard, Shuvah Bonim Shuvah, Chutz Me'Acher, and all that, and then he actually started openly violating Averis. So now we're saying, during both of those stages, Rav Meir learned from him, both when it was still a hidden apikorsis in his heart, which is like the pit inside the gate, and also when later on, when he was brazenly violating Torah, which is like the peel of the pomegranate. An interesting point that's brought in Kisei HaRizal, by the way, we talked about, so we said, where did Acher go wrong in his dais, is that he said he saw Malach Matat sitting, and he made the mistake of thinking that that means whatever. Well, Malach Matat's name is spelt Mem Tes Tes Resh Vav Nun. So the outside of it, the outer letters, so to speak, are Mem on one end, and Resh Vav Nun on the other hand, which we arranged spell out Rimon. Then on the inside, you have Tes and Tes. Now, the two Tesses, among other things, two Tesses and Tesses 9, add them together. That equals Chai. So, therefore, that represents the point, like we're saying over here in the metaphor of the Rimon, that there was a living core within there, which Rav Meir was able to go and access. And the Rimon, the outside of it, the mistaken understanding that Acher had by seeing Malach Matat, he knew to throw away and not to have anything to do with that. There's various places in Rav Levi Yitzchok's writings and the writing of Rav Levi Yitzchok, that his father, where he expands on this and talks about different things that the two Tessin represent, different aspects of how we see that there was a goodness in there which Rav Meir was able to access and to throw out the Rimon, to throw out the outer inedible peel. So that's so Rav Barav Shila is saying to Eliyahu HaNavi, so that's how it is. So Amalei, so Eliyahu says, you know what, now that you said that, now that you were Melamed Zchus on Rav Meir, Hashem has accepted your argument now on the spot, and therefore now, Hashta Ka'amar, now I hear that Hashem is saying in the Yeshiva Shomayla, he's saying a statement from Rav Meir that we find in a Mishnah. Meir bni kachu, Hashem is saying, my son Meir says as follows in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. The context of the Mishnah over there is that it talks about how you have certain people who are executed by Mrs. Bastin. Afterwards, their body is hanged on a pole for a short amount of time, and the Mishnah describes the details about it. There's two different opinions. Is it kolan is skull and nitlin? Anybody who gets skila is afterwards their body is hung up, or is it only certain people? The halacha is it's only people who worshipped Avodah Zarah or cursed Hashem's name. Anyway, so then Rav Meir comments on it in the Mishnah, and he says, yeah, I want you to realize how much it bothers Hashem when even a Rasha has to be punished and killed, and that his body is hanged over there, which is why we want to have, as soon as possible, that the body is taken down. The Mishnah describes over there, it's also to live, the Pasuk says it's also to leave the body overnight, like Solon Nivlas Ala'etz. But what they would do is, in order to minimize the disgrace, especially because the Mishnah describes over there, a person, after all, is a tzelem elokim. So when he's hanging there, it's as if like an image of Hashem is hanging over there. So the Mishnah describes they would hang the body there as close as possible to Shkia, and then it just hangs there for a minute or two, and then they take it down. So the Meir says in the Mishnah over there, Bizman sha'odim mitzar, when a person is suffering, Shchina maloshen ameres, what expression does the Shchina say? Kolani meiroshi, kolani mizroi. I feel heavy in my head, and I feel heavy in my arm. The Gemara actually explains over there what the word kolani means. There's a couple of different explanations about it in the Gemara. It's based on the pasuk over there. It says, kikilo asalekim toli. Literally, it means it's a curse or a blasphemy to Hashem that a person is hanging over there. So the Meir explains that it's not so much a curse, but it's like Hashem is saying, tal lace. I don't have a lightness. I feel a heaviness. I feel a tsar that this person is hanging over there. The head and the arm, so to speak, because those are what I created a person with. Marsha relates it over there in Sanhedrin to the Tfilin Shor Yad and Tfilin Shor Rosh. You have that Hashem, so to speak, that Hashem created the body with his hands and then blew in the neshama from his mouth, which is part of the head. So therefore, that's another reason to mention Roshi and Zroi. And Rameir continues, Im kacha kodesh baruch hu mitzar al domen shor roshoyim shenishbach. If Hashem is that pain and troubled, kavyachol, by when the blood of a rosha is spilled, how much more so when the blood of tzaddikim is spilled. So in other words, the point is, so Hashem picked this particular thing, and Rameir says, and actually Marsha says, why did Hashem pick this particular memra of Rameir? Because it actually has to do with this whole matter of Acher, that we're saying over here, Acher had been a rosha. Here, Acher had been a Rosha, and eventually he had to pass away, and he had to go through a spell in Gehenim and so forth, and still was saying that Hashem is pained even by what happened to a Rosha. How much more so to a Tzaddik? So therefore, now, in other words, now that Rabbi Bar Avshila had defended Rameir, and Hashem accepted that argument, and he's going to now start saying over sayings in the Beis Din Shamayim, in the Yeshiva Shamayla, in Rameir's name, then the first one that Hashem picked to start anew is this statement of Rameir's, which tells us something about the relationship that Hashem has even with a Rosha like Acher. Continues the Gemara. Ashkechei Shmuel Rav Yehuda. One time Shmuel met up with Rav Yehuda, his Talmud, to Toli Vakoya Ibra Didosha. Rav Yehuda was standing and leaning against the bolt of the door, the Kabachi, and he was crying. Omalei, so he asked him Shinina, a sharp one, that's Shmuel's favorite name for Rav Yehuda throughout Shas. One explanation is it means sharp one, the Oruch brings another explanation, it means one person with big teeth. Anyway, that's his favorite name for his favorite nickname for Rav Yehuda, his Talmud throughout Shas. He asked him, Amai Kabochis, what are you crying? Omalei, so Rav Yehuda says, he's going to explain at some length, but basically the gist of it, he's going to explain, I'm crying and I'm very worried about if even great Talmud Chachamim went bad, who's to say the same won't happen to me? But he says it, and he explains as follows. Mi zuter mai dechtiv behu brabonan. Is it a small thing, this that it says about Talmud Chachamim? Ayesofer, people, is going to come a point when people are going to say, where is the sofer, the counter? Ayeshokel, where is the weigher? Ayesofer asamigdolim, where is the one who counts the towers? Poshet pshat, in context of that the pasuk is in, is going to come a point when all of the hostile goyim who are attacking and dominating over us are going to be gone, and people are going to say, wow, where are all those mighty goyish rulers who used to count and measure and weigh everything and count how many towers the cities have for their defense? And now they're all gone, Baruch Hashem. But the Gemara is understanding that it's also a reference to great, high-level Talmud Chachamim. Aye Sofer, when we're going to ask where is the Sofer, that refers to people who knew Torah so thoroughly, Shoy Soferim L'chol Oisiyas Sheba Torah. They could count and get an exact number of all the letters in the Torah, meaning that they were familiar with where all the Haseiras and Yaseiras are. Now, even in the time of the Gemara already, the Amiroyim, we're not so familiar with it. The Gemara in Kedushin mentions when it discusses over there, when it brings a brisa over there about what the middle letter of the Torah is, and the Gemara asks about the details of that, and the Gemara says, we're not but, and Rabbi Yosef says over there, we're not Baki in Chaseiras V'Yaseiras. We don't know in various places where a word is supposed to have a Vav or Yud or whatever, and where it's not. And that has implications in halacha, by the way. When you take out a Sefer Torah to lane, if you find a mistake in it, many times, of course, you have to put away the Sefer Torah and take out another one. But if the mistake is in Chaseiras via Yesteris, and it doesn't affect the meaning, and it doesn't affect the pronunciation, then you don't. Because, yes, our tikkunim and our mesorta and whatever will say that a certain word, let's say lavoisenu, is supposed to be spelt with a vav. But how do we know that that's genuinely correct, that that's really how it was from Moshe Rabbeinu's times? Maybe on the contrary, maybe the Sefer Torah that has it without that is the correct one. So therefore, so eventually we should fix it up and get it in line with the Masorah that all the other Sefer Torah are written in, but nevertheless, we don't take out another one on where in the middle of Kriya for that kind of mistake. But the point is, now we're saying at one time, there were great Tamil Chachamim who knew the Torah letter perfect. That's the Ayah Sofer. Ayah Shoykel, when it continues, where are the weighers? That means the Talmud Chachamim showed Shoykel Kol Kalam V'Chamurim Sheba Torah. They were able to weigh and to darshan all the possible Kal V'Chomers in the Torah, where Kal V'Chomer is like a balance scale. This one is lighter, this one is heavier than the other. Marsha adds also, you know, you think about it, a lot of times when the Gemara brings a Kal V'Chomer, a lot of times it'll try to slug it up, or it'll point out that this one has a certain, that there's a pircha, there's a detail in this one that doesn't apply to that one, and so on and so forth. So they knew not only where to make the Kal V'Chomers, but how to weigh them logically and figure out which ones are valid Kal V'Chomers and which ones are not. Again, showing that they were very high level Talmid Chachamim. And when it continues, Ayei Sofer Samigdolim, when it says, where are those who count the towers, that means, Shoyoshonim, there are Talmid Chachamim who were able to teach Shin Halachas the Migdal HaPerech Ba'Avir, 300 Halachas just on a tower that flies in the air. Now, what does that mean? Rashi over here brings three explanations. One is the letter Lamed has the top part. A letter Lamed is basically made of a Chof with a Vav on top of it. And there were details of how that Vav exactly is written. So they knew how to darshan 300 reasons or 300 halachas that have to do with the details of how that Vav part of the Lamed is written. So it's called Migdal HaPerech Ba'Avir because it looks like a tower floating there above the body of the Lamed. The second explanation, Rashi says, is talking about the Migdal Bavel. So they knew 300, halachas that are relevant as far as Migdal Bavel. And the third explanation, Rashi says, is the word is not supposed to be Migdal HaPereach Ba'Avir, but rather Migdal HaPasuach Ba'Avir, in which case Migdal means like a cabinet or a chest. It's called Migdal because often they were shaped like towers, and you have a Mishnah in Masechta Ohalos that deals with the Dinim. When you have such a cabinet outdoors and you have Tumah under or inside various parts of it, when does the Tumah spread in this in various directions? When does it stay contained where it is? And they knew 300 halachas just on that topic. Then in Sanhedrin, this Gemara is also brought in Sanhedrin. Rashi brings a couple of other explanations over there of what Migdal HaPereach Ba'Avir is. Another one Rashi says over there is it means that it discusses over there, elsewhere in Sanhedrin over there, it discusses the Chachamim had to be thoroughly familiar with, among other things, the details of Tishuf. Because they needed to know to be able to judge people who are accused of kishuf, to be able to of black magic, to be able to judge them. So one of the things that such people might do is they might make a tower fly in the air, and therefore that's another explanation that these chachamim that we're talking about, Doeg and Achitofel, knew 300 halachas as far as the details of how to do that and how magicians do that kind of thing. Then Rashi says yet another explanation there in Sanhedrin. Sometimes you can have a case where a person is carried into a place of tumah inside a box or inside a carriage or something like that. This is the Negea nowadays, for example, Koyanim traveling in a car or train or whatever in a place where there are trees that overhang graves. You have even, for example, you go for example on Bay Parkway or in certain other places, we have trees that are growing by the side of the road where some parts of those trees, one side overhangs the cemetery and the other side overhangs the road, and you have real issues over there as far as Koyanim traveling over there. Also airplanes, there's all kinds of things like that. Anyway, so such a thing is a Migdal HaPereach Ba'Avir. It's again like a tower-shaped cabinet or something that's flying in the air, meaning that people are carrying it, let's say. Suppose a Koyan or a Nozir or whatever is inside it. When does he become Tomei? When does he not? The various details about that. They knew 300 halachas about that. So five different explanations of what it means halachas in that. Marsha there in Sanhedrin brings a very interesting one, a sixth possibility. The Beis Mikdash is compared to a tower. Now, in the time of Doeg and Achitofel, which is what we're talking about over here, they did not yet know where the Beis Mikdash was going to be built. Doeg was Doria and Achitophel were both enemies of David. Doria at the beginning, earlier in David's life, during Shaul's reign, and Achitophel afterwards, towards the end of David's life. But in any case, this was before the Beis Hamikdash was built. So it's Pereach Ba'aver, in the sense it's floating in the air. Nobody knows exactly where it's going to be built. But they knew 300 relevant halachas as far as the determination of it. Anyway, so that's Sofer HaSamigdolim. V'omer Rab Ami, and Rab Ami says, you should know, Shin Boi, Bo Doig V'Achitofel, B'migdol HaPereach Ba'aver, Doig and Achitofel, who were great Tamar Chachamim, but they unfortunately, they also were Rishoyim, and again, they were opponents of David, and eventually the Gemara in Sanhedrin says they lost their place in Olam Haba. So they were able to ask 300 good questions as far as this concept of Migdol HaPereach Ba'aver. And yet, with all of that great amount of Torah that they knew, Utnan, yet we learn in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Gimel Malachim Bedalad Hadyotis, Ein Lam Chelet Lam Abba, that there were three kings, Yerovam, Achav, and Menasheh, and four Hadyotis, which includes Doeg and Achitofel, who don't have a Chelet Lam Abba, because as much as they knew Torah, it didn't protect them from having bad Midas, and from doing Averis, and from losing their place at Lam Abba. So, after explaining all of that, Rabbi Yehuda says, Anan Matavi Alon, you want to know, Shmuel, why I'm crying? What's going to be with us? What's going to prevent us that we're learning Torah, that we're not going to go and end up like they did? Shmuel answers in Shinina, Tina Hoisabalibam. There was a rottenness inside their heart. Tina literally means mud. So it means like there was a filthy mud inside them. Sometimes the word tina is also used to mean like a bad thought, or like hatred or whatever. So there was something wrong within them to begin with, and eventually it came out. They were Rishoyim to begin with, whereas Shmuel is implying to Rabbi Yehuda, you have much less to worry about that. Of course, Altamin ba'atzmachad yo Moshe, but on the other hand, you don't have that tina in your heart. We find elsewhere that Shmuel actually says on the same Rabbi Yehuda, he says this person is not a human being. This person is on the level of a malach, as Gemara in Nida. The Gemara also mentions, by the way, after it mentions about this part about Doeg and Achitofel and the 300 questions that they could ask, Rava points out over there, ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rachmano Liba Boi, Hashem is looking for the heart, how a person's heart is in tune with Hashem, so Doeg and Achitofel were not. As much as they knew enormous amounts of Torah, they were still Rishoyim, and they were not aligned with what Hashem wants of them, whereas Rava goes on to point out, Rav Yehuda was, to the extent where when there would be a famine, when there would be a drought and he'd have to ask for rain, he would even just start taking off his shoes and already Hashem would answer his tefillahs and rain would fall. So now Shmuel is telling Rabbi Yehuda, you have less to worry about that because you don't have that tina, you don't have that mud in your heart. So the Gemara says, Acher Mai, so fine, in the case of Doeg and Achitofel, we understand, they were Bale Lashon Hara, they were Bale Machlokas, they started up with David and all. With Acher, what happened that was saying, Taka, why did his Torah not protect him from going bad? And the answer is, Zemer Yevoni Le Posek Mipume. He never stopped singing Greek songs. So Rashi says that, not so much the fact that they were Greek, but the fact that there were songs b'chlal. After the Churban, he shouldn't have been singing. Properly speaking, there is a halacha, it's brought in Baba Basra, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, after the halachas of Tisha B'Av and all, that in principle, we're not allowed to sing and play music after the Churban. There are all kinds of exceptions to that, and there's an entire Jewish music industry that basically uses one or another of those exceptions. You're allowed to sing songs praising Hashem, and you're allowed to sing some Sameach Chosin V'Kala, and but in principle, the truth is a lot of what goes on as Jewish music, maybe Taka, based on those halachas, ought not to exist. Acher lived in that time, shortly after the Churban, so he has no business singing these kinds of songs at all. That's Rashi. Marsha points out, okay, but in that case, why bother mentioning that it was Greek songs? And if it was Lashon Kodesh Shtika song, it would be the same problem. So rather, Marsha says the vote is exactly that. that it was because it was Greek songs, those themselves, they have ideas of Minos in them, either openly, they make songs about their gods and their heroes and whatnot, or even if not, then the music always has something of the composer in it. So songs composed by Greek musicians are going to have something of Greek culture and the Greek mindset and whatever in them, and Acher is singing such songs, and therefore, so that already showed that there's something wrong inside him, which eventually came out blatantly later on. We see from that the importance of sticking to Jewish music, of staying away from Goyish music. Anyway, so that's one. Omru Olav al Acher, and furthermore, they said about Acher, Shebeshasha Yomid Bebeis Medrash, when he would stand up after learning or teaching in the Beis Medrash, have a Sifri Minin notion Lemechekai, many books and pamphlets of teachings of Minim, of teachings of various Apikorsim, would fall out of his lap. So in other words, even when he's still a Talmud Chacham and sitting in this Medrash and learning and teaching Torah, he's also into reading such pamphlets and booklets and whatever. Marashar explains, in other words, the vote would be, he would have them with him, he would cover them, hide them under his clothes when he's in the Beis Medrash. He didn't want the other Chachamim to know that he's reading material like that, but sometimes when he was so distracted by his learning, then he would forget, and when he'd stand up, they'd fall out. So this also goes to show, in other words, that there was something wrong with him even when he was still learning Torah and being a Shomer Torah mitzvahs. Nevertheless, there was already something starting to go wrong with him, and therefore, so that's why his Torah didn't protect him. That's why his Torah didn't protect him because to begin with, there was something the matter over here. So eventually, Akosa points out, as we learned yesterday, eventually there were things that pushed Acher finally over the edge. We saw the story with the boy who went up to do Shiloh HaKan and Kibbut Avraham and fell and died, and that he saw the tongue of one of the Asara Arugim Malchus being dragged around and whatever. But we're saying that even long before that, between these Greek songs that he liked to sing and these facts of Minos that he liked to read, so already it showed that something was going wrong long before that. And eventually it came out. So the Gemara continues in that context. Shal Nimus Hagaudius Reb Meir. Nimus Hagaudi, who was a famous Goyish philosopher of that time, asked Reb Meir. He asked Reb Meir himself, the Talmud of Acher. And he was, Gaudi means a weaver. So apparently that was the guy's job, and therefore he used the metaphor from the world of cloth making. He says, "Kol amar denochis leyoda solik." Is it true that isn't it true that all wool that goes into the vat to be dyed ends up getting dyed? So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that exactly that. Anytime you put a piece of wool in a vat full of dye, it's going to get dyed. So the question is, here you Jews say Nimus is saying, and it's called Nimus over here, by the way. The Medrash calls him Avnim or saying, or whatever. So he says, listen, you Jews say that your Torah, that a person learns Torah, that it protects him from Averis. Is that really so? I mean, it's true. Every piece of wool that goes into the vat ends up with dye on it, but does it in fact protect that? Just like the dye protects the wool from getting ruined, the same way, does your Torah actually protect a person from becoming bad? If so, then what about what happened to Acher? Rashi's second explanation is that he's asking, is it true that everybody who goes into Gehenna winds up coming out of there? So Amalei said, a mayor answers him, it's not so simple. Kolman to have a noki agav ime solik, any wool that was clean as it came from the mother will get dyed properly. Meaning, in other words, like with actual lamb's wool, if you take wool after the sheep has been around a while and the wool is all dirty and you put it into the vat, it's not going to absorb the dye well. But if you take the wool as clean as it was on the day the lamb was born and you dye that, then yes, it will dye well. The nimshal being, in other words, that when a person has yiras chet before his chachma, then yes, his chachma will be preserved with him and it will help keep him away from averus. But if his chachma comes first and he doesn't have enough yiras chet as with Acher, then yeah, it's not going to. Called the loy havanoki agav ime, and any wool that's not clean the way it came from the mother, loy solik, is not going to get dyed properly, meaning, in other words, that's what happened with Acher. According to Rashi's second explanation, when Nimus or Avnimus was asking, is it true that everybody who goes into Gehenna comes out? So Rameir is answering him that when a person has schosin, when he's not completely filthied up then yes, he can come out of Gehenna eventually. If he has no chosim at all, if he's like completely one big thing of filth, then yeah, he may not come out of there. So in other words, the point is, Acher, who, as we said before, did have chosim, he had his Torah, so eventually he's able to come out of Gehenna. Marsha adds also the detail when Remeir is using the metaphor with the wool, agav ime, that you have to look at how the wool came from the mother. So now we learned yesterday in that long Tosfos and the whole thing in the Yerushalmi, we talked about that a couple of the things that predisposed Acher to eventually going bad had to do with his parents. In particular, when his father, when he told the story over there, how by his bris, his father decided, I'm going to devote my son to a life of learning Torah, but not it wasn't Lashma, it was because he saw the glory of the fire of Hashem that came down and surrounded Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So therefore now Rabbi Meir is saying, you know, ultimately then he didn't have the proper motivation, agav ime, from his parents, namely that they did devote him, they did raise him to become a Talmud Chacham, but not for the right reasons, and therefore Lo Solik, therefore the die didn't take, and therefore he ended up becoming what he became. Yom Yom Mashiach Ga'ola, Shasvav Elul, it's the day when Tumchut Tumimim was founded. When the Rebbe Rashab founded Tumchut Tumimim, so shortly, a couple of years after that, he said a famous sicha based on the Gemara, Kol HaYotzel, Mohammed Space David, Kos of Get Krisus L'Ishtay, that whenever any soldier would go out to war in David's army, he would write a get in advance for his wife, so that way if he's missing an action, then his wife's not an aguna. So now, the Rebbe Rashab explained that the wife over here represents metaphorically all the inyona olam hazeh, all the everything in olam hazeh that a person is usually involved with. So the Rebbe Rashab was saying the purpose of this, of the founding of this yeshiva is to create chayole beis David who are going to go and fight the wars of beis David, meaning that they have to be neiris lahoyer, they have to be lamplighters in the whole world, they're going to reveal and they're going to spread pnimius haTorah, Torah Sachsidus. They're going to strengthen our emuna in the Gola Amitis Vashlema through Mashiach Tzidkenu at the time of Ikus de Mashiach, where, as the Rebbe Rashab also said in that Sicha, there's going to come a point, Asher Chirfu Oivecha Hashem, that your enemies Hashem are mocking and reviling, Asher Chirfu Ikus de Mashiach, they're reviling and mocking at the time of Ikus de Mashiach, and therefore the Talmudim of Tumchut Tumimim, the soldiers of Chayol de Beis David have to stand up against that. So therefore, now, the Rebbe was saying, our Rebbe was saying in the Sicha, one of the Sichas on the subject was in commemoration of 100 years since the Rebbe Rashab assumed the Nesius, that nowadays this applies not just to people from Tumchut Tumimim, but every Jew now has this responsibility of the Shlichus of Mochemes Beis David. That's true, yeah. Finishing up with the halachas of what you're allowed and not allowed to wear on Shabbos. So you have a kameya. Nowadays, it's not uncommon, if at all, that anybody does, but when a person is wearing a kameya, then it's not so simple to go out with it on Shabbos. There are different detailed dinim about it in the Gemara, whether it's known to work and then and so forth. There's other kinds of things that people wear as protective kinds of things like that, certain other ones you're allowed to wear on Shabbos. In general, the basic idea is it a tachshit or does it have some kind of functional purpose that you're wearing it for example, we've talked about before earlier in connection with other dinim in the simen, for example, those hospital bracelets that they have for new fathers or whatever, those you wouldn't be able to go out with on Shabbos because it has no particular purpose for you. It's just meant for the hospital staff to be able to keep track of things. Same way, for example, a tracking ankle bracelet like the police put on people sometimes. On the other hand, for example, you have those necklaces that people wear, that old people wear in case they fall, that'll send out an emergency alert. Such things there's more of a reason to be able to wear on Shabbos because you actually are gaining some benefit from it, that it gives you the stability and the security to know that, yeah. Well, Ham says that's a good question, actually. I mean, based on what he's saying over here, I guess it depends, really. I mean, the chamsa is usually worn as jewelry, so there might be, in general, many, many kinds of jewelry you are allowed to wear on Shabbos. So, yeah, if a woman is wearing a chamsa as a necklace or something, then maybe, yeah.